2006, 70% of all internet traffic was torrenting, the primary way for people to pirate songs, movies, and video games. Yet today, it's barely a percentage of the internet. How did torrenting become so popular, and how did it die out? In the late 90s, internet traffic was booming, as was internet speeds. Most users had left dial-up internet for broadband, moving from 50 kilobits per second to over 1 megabit per second, or 20 times the speed. This leap forward opened a world of possibilities. It no longer took minutes to load an image or download a song, but seconds. Traffic was booming, but there was a problem. People wanted to download songs and movies, but couldn't. There was no Netflix or Disney Plus, and iTunes was barely getting off the ground. These services allow us to access music, movies, games, and everything else super easily and legally. But back then, before the spread of centralized servers and systems, the internet was more like the Wild West. Companies didn't know how to service or monetize it. So out of this void came peer-to-peer. Imagine you and thousands of others wanted to listen to a new song online, but there was no easy way to do it. There was no website you could go to and just stream from. Instead, someone had to rip it from a CD and decide to use a peer-to-peer platform.
When you connect, you're downloading music from another Napster user's machine, and the software, the programs, the music never resides on Napster's equipment.
Here, the user would seed the file for others on a platform like Napster. They aren't uploading the file. Instead, they're allowing you to download the song directly from their computer. Then, with the file on your computer, you could seed it for others. The more seeders, the easier it was to download. Peer-to-peer made it easy for pirated songs and movies to spread like wildfire. Platforms like Napster, LimeWire, and BitTorrent began appearing, and soon, they all had millions of users. The internet in the 2000s really was a different place. It seemed like everyone was pirating. All of this was obviously illegal, and it was a bit annoying to do, with all kinds of viruses hiding in the seed files. But that didn't stop people. It was easy enough for it to catch on. Industries like film and music had never seen such widespread copyright infringement, and it was only getting worse. Torrenting had taken off. Its size was unbelievable. By 2006, 70% of the internet was peer-to-peer file sharing. People no longer needed to buy CDs for songs. They could torrent them and then export them to an MP3 player. Easy for users, but it was costing copyright holders everything. The Motion Picture Association of America lost over $2.3 billion in potential revenue thanks to internet piracy, most of which came from peer-to-peer. Artists saw their new songs and albums leaked and downloaded. And it wasn't just artists who did. The global entertainment industry as a whole had been changed forever, and copyright holders needed to take action. The first instinct of media companies was to chase down the platform owners. These were the big peer-to-peer platforms, because if they were shut down, users wouldn't be able to pirate files. At least, that's what they thought. One of the first peer-to-peer platforms was Napster, and it naturally became one of their first targets.
Legal troubles over copyright infringement aren't slowing down Napster. The song-swapping company is now in the top 50 list of most visited sites on the web, according to Media Metrics.
But Napster made one fatal mistake. While the company did not host any songs themselves, they used a centralized server to organize these pirated files. And unfortunately for them, this gave law enforcement an easy target. Napster was sued for tens of millions by copyright holders, including A&M Records and even Metallica. Yet, during the lawsuits, something unexpected happened. These lawsuits had given Napster a lot of publicity. Even more people began signing up, rising to a peak of 80 million users. Not only that, existing users began downloading as much as they could before the platform disappeared. After countless lawsuits and payouts, Napster filed for bankruptcy in September of 2002. And soon, other cases began to spring up, the most notable of which was the Recording Industry Association of America, or the RIAA, suing LimeWire on behalf of record labels. They alleged that LimeWire had cost the music industry a ridiculous $75 trillion. For context, the GDP of the entire planet at the time was $59 trillion. Naturally, the court labeled this as absurd. RIAA then pushed for $50 billion in damages, and eventually a final settlement of $105 million was reached. But this was just the beginning. Copyright owners soon realized how difficult the battle against piracy was.
If they think Napster's bad, I can tell you there's a lot worse coming. You know, there's software that's, that is untraceable just around the corner.
Whenever authorities closed down one platform, three more appeared. Users simply migrated to the new platforms and continued their illegal downloads elsewhere. Not only that, future platforms became decentralized and harder to track down, and the lawsuits were getting longer and longer. While it took Napster a couple of years to be shut down, torrent platforms like LimeWire were active for 10. Similarly, it took authorities a decade to finally arrest the last Pirate Bay founder, and even when they did, the website continued to exist. Some copyright holders and artists tried a more devious, malicious tactic. If they couldn't shut down torrenting legally, they would kill it from the inside. In 2003, Madonna intentionally leaked her latest album, American Life, onto file-sharing platforms. Except, it wasn't really her music. To a user browsing and torrenting, the songs might seem up to par, but the tracks contained no music, just Madonna saying, "What the F do you think you're doing?" This was called torrent poisoning. It would make the data less reliable, and it would give some users a good scare. Perhaps enough to stop them from torrenting further. And it wasn't just artists who did it either. HAL Laboratory intentionally leaked their latest video game, Earthbound. To a user who downloaded it, everything seemed normal at first, but as the game went on, the difficulty grew rampantly, far more than normal. Not only that, near the end of the game, the copy would freeze, and when the player rebooted, they would see all of their progress had been deleted. But even with all the lawsuits and the torrent poisoning, things weren't working. Torrenting was still only growing. So organizations like RIAA tried a scare tactic next. While going after the platform owners, they also began to sue the users. Tens of thousands of users received lawsuits for illegally downloading music. College students found themselves charged with absurd charges. Jamie Thomas, a single mother of two, was found liable for $222,000 in damages for sharing 24 songs on Kazaa. This did scare off a lot of users, but created even more problems. RIAA had been forcing internet service providers to hand over user data on a technicality, Digital Millennium Copyright Act. If they suspected someone of copyright infringement, an ISP had to hand over this data without the approval of a judge. With that came an abuse of power. RIAA began sending thousands of lawsuits to users even vaguely connected to the platforms. For example, Sarah Ward, a grandmother, was sued for using the Windows-only Kazaa software to download hardcore rap music. Except, she only owned a Macintosh computer. Eventually, all of that did change. In 2003, a judge ruled that the Digital Millennium Copyright Act gave RIAA no right to request user data from ISPs. RIAA was unlawfully casting wide nets to catch users. Moving forward, RIAA would need to conduct its efforts under the supervision of a judge. This brought their crusade against users to a halt, so copyright holders tried yet another tactic. Authorities instead decided to follow the money. Chasing every platform wasn't working. Instead, they wanted to prevent any more from appearing by starving them. Torrent platforms made money through displaying advertising. If authorities could stop their revenue, they would stop the incentive behind the websites. They created an infringing website list and began pressuring search engines like Google to block customers from accessing these platforms. Partly, this was to decrease traffic, but more importantly, to decrease ad revenue. Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, AOL, and many other companies all promised to help reduce the flow of ad revenue to piracy sites. This certainly hurt torrenting and moved it away from the mainstream, but it wasn't enough to kill it. There were still millions of people torrenting files and finding a way to keep piracy platforms popular. Ironically, the solution was something completely unintentional, one that no one initially saw coming. In the early 2000s, e-commerce was still in its infancy. iTunes launched in 2001, sometime after the launch of platforms like Napster, and it took some time before it saw mainstream adoption. There weren't a lot of legal and affordable alternatives to piracy. Companies were still figuring out how to distribute online, so torrenting was just the easiest way for many to consume media. But that all changed. In 2007, amidst the battle between pirates and law enforcement, came the real killer, Netflix. you could suddenly watch anything you wanted for just $9 per month. Naturally, Netflix would explode in popularity. In two short years, they had surpassed 11 million subscribers, which doubled 2 years after that. This is what really killed torrenting: convenience. The logic is simple. If the legal method is easier and reasonably priced, almost everyone will use the legal service. A small percentage will continue to pirate content to have it for free. But convenience is what drives not just most of our purchases, but our entire behavior. It was suddenly easier to watch shows and movies legally through Netflix than to torrent. Not only that, with the release of more subscription platforms like Spotify, users had little reason to use piracy. Thus began the sharp decline of torrenting. Torrenting gradually fell out of favor. By 2011, peer-to-peer had fallen to under 19% of internet traffic in North America. By 2013, that traffic was down to just 7.39%. It was on a gradual decline, and with it came the rise of web traffic. In 2015, all of peer-to-peer was estimated to be just 3% of internet traffic. For a comparison, that was about the size of Hulu, which wasn't even the biggest streaming site. This created a snowball effect. There were less people on these platforms, so less people to seed files. Not only was there less traffic, but it was getting harder and harder to torrent altogether. With less traffic came less impact too. In 2017, pirates threatened to release Orange is the New Black on BitTorrent before it was officially released. But despite leaking the show, there was almost zero impact on the official performance. By this point, the users who torrented the show probably weren't going to subscribe to Netflix either way. Today, torrenting has almost disappeared. It still exists, but is a tiny part on the fringe of the internet. Torrenting is simply too inconvenient for most people. Piracy does still exist today, but it's not peer-to-peer. It's illegal streaming, where users can watch content without downloading anything, albeit while getting bombarded with advertisements and viruses. With dozens of streaming services out and prices constantly being hiked, illegal streaming is catching steam. By 2016, illegal streaming claimed 73% of internet piracy. But the same cannot be said about torrenting. Times have changed. Those who grew up around BitTorrent and Napster are much older and less likely to pirate. In the meantime, younger generations grew up in a totally different world, with Netflix, Spotify, and all kinds of convenient and legal methods, with no desire or need to use torrenting, or rather, without knowing it even existed in the first place. If you're interested in deeper dives, interviews with insiders, and exclusive tech analysis, you can sign up to our free weekly newsletter. Link is below. But until then, I'm Hari, and I'll see you guys on the next one.